glories to
yat of which arte for the purpose iha in this material world karmani many activities in factories, industries, speculation, and so on. Vidvat, advanced in knowledge. Mani, thinking himself to be. Asakrit, again and again. Nadaha, a person. Karoti, performs. Ataha, from this. Viparyasam, the opposite. Amogam, unfailingly. Vindate, achieves. Halam, results. Translation. A materialistic person thinking himself very advanced in intelligence continually acts for economic development. But again and again, as enunciated in the Vedas, he is frustrated by material activities either in this life or in the next. Indeed, the results one obtains are inevitably the opposite of those one desires. You can repeat. A materialistic person, thinking himself very advanced in intelligence, continually acts for economic development. But again and again, as enunciated in the Vedas, he is frustrated by material activities, either in this life or in the next. Indeed, the results one obtains are inevitably the opposite of those one desires. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. No one has ever achieved the results he desired from material activities. On the contrary, everyone has been frustrated again and again. Therefore, one must not waste his time in such material activities for sensual pleasure, either in this life or in the next. So many nationalists, economists, and other ambitious persons have tried for happiness individually or collectively, but history proves that they have all been frustrated. In recent history, we have seen many political leaders work hard for individual and collective economic development, but they have all failed. This is the law of nature as clearly explained in the next verse. So, yadartha iha karmani vidvan man yasakrinatha Kurochito viparyasam amogam bindate palam. So, omagana timidanda shag ananjana shilakaya chakshur and meditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, reading this particular verse and purport brings to mind Krishna's descriptions in the Gita concerning the mode of passion, because that's really what's being described here in this verse. A mode, a person in the mode of passion, because it says continually acts for economic development and again as enunciated in the Vedas, he is frustrated. So thinking about that, how it's related to Bhagavad Gita, I was doing some research to figure out which verses in the Bhagavad Gita deal with people in the mode of passion and the miseries that people experience in the mode of passion. So I actually made a list of all those different verses. The reason, before I start talking about these different verses and how they relate to the topic of this verse in the Bhagavatam, the reason the description is given of the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness in the Bhagavad Gita is that so we can identify them within ourselves. You know, we could say that I am now acting in passion, I am now acting in ignorance, or I am now acting in goodness. And all three of these are ropes, they're called gunas, of course, which means ropes, that tie one to this material world. So one has to be free of these three modes of nature. These three modes of nature are all pervasive. Krishna in the Gita says, anahiki kaschit shanamapi jatutishtati akarmakrit karyate yavasa karma sarva prakriti jarguna. Everyone in this world is forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the modes of material nature. No one can refrain from action even for a minute. Of course, you may say, I'm refraining from action, I'm just lying there sleeping. But that's an action too. You know, just being ignorant is an action. And another interesting thing is just how the mode of ignorance, the manifestations of the mode of ignorance externally appear very similar to those who are in the transcendental platform. Because those in the mode of ignorance, completely in the mode of ignorance, basically, they also see everything equally because they're asleep. And they appear to be peaceful because they're asleep or intoxicated or whatever. And those transcendental to this mature world also, you know, Vidya, Vinaya, Sampane, Brahmani, Gavihastani, Shunichaiva, Svapakecha, Pandita, Samadarshana. So it's very important to understand, and another verse in the Gita where Krishna says it's just the modes acting, and that's it in the mature world. You know, we may see or analyze things in a different way. Oh, that's due to someone's childhood, or that's due to it being too cold or too hot. And those things may be valuable in certain contexts, but actually it's just the modes of nature, Krishna says. We should ultimately see that when dealing with this material world. It's just the modes of nature. Just like I was trying to analyze the other day, why so many people are attracted to these different films, like, you know, the Star Wars that just came out and everything like that. And, you know, you can go through a whole analysis. It's the archetypes and everything like that. Archetypes means basically you have certain types of personalities that fit into just about every other story, like the hero and the anti-hero and all that other stuff. Anyway, so, but it's actually just modes of nature. And we're attracted to certain modes of nature, and when you have a story with all the modes of nature, then practically everybody would be attracted to it. You know, the characters, you can identify with the character in the mode of ignorance, or identify with the character in the mode of goodness, etc. So, anyway, so it's the modes of nature are all pervasive in this world. Try to understand that. And everything that everyone does is impelled by whatever modes they happen to be affected by. I mean, in the 17th chapter of the Gita, you find descriptions about people even develop certain religions based upon the modes of nature. Arjuna asked the question at the beginning of the 17th chapter of the Gita, if someone is not following Shastra, of course, Shastra means something that is eternally coming from God, you know, Dharmam to Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. Shastra doesn't mean any old book about God, because, you know, there are speculators and theologians, whether we're talking about India or we're talking about the Western world, who speculate about God and they consider it Shastra. I mean, it's like, I'm not going to mention individual books, but you find, I mean, let's mention the Bible, for example. You'll find different personalities giving their, let's say, philosophical position or practical suggestions based upon the modes of nature they happen to be in different books of the Bible, which is interesting. And then, of course, then the theologians later on, like St. Thomas Aquinas and others, just depends on what mode of nature you're in. But Shastra means it comes from, real Shastra, of course, means Dharmam tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam, it comes from God. So anyway, so Krishna is asked that question by Arjuna at the beginning of the 17th chapter of the Gita. What is one's faith or religion? Sometimes faith can be translated as religion. Religion can be translated as faith. What is one's faith if one doesn't follow Shastra? Is his faith in goodness, passion, or ignorance? That's the beginning of the 17th chapter, the question Arjuna asks. And Krishna answers in a very interesting way. He says, according to the mode that someone's in, he develops a particular type of faith. And you see that in the world, that there's these religions, or not the religion itself, but people who follow a particular branch of a religion, who are very violent. And they utilize their interpretation of religion to justify their violence. And it enthuses them. I was just watching the news the other day. There was one person, I'm not going to mention what religion, I think you can all guess. He got up in this pulpit. It was marble and everything surrounding it. And he was preaching how you have to kill all, the whole world is gathering around against us, and we have to defend ourselves and destroy, and we have God on our side. Of course, he used the nomenclature for God that's prominent in their religion. And so it's a very like ignorant, passionate type of approach. It wasn't completely ignorant, because if it was completely ignorant, he'd be sleeping on the pulpit. But there was passion there. It was a mixture. The three modes of nature generally don't appear in their pure, pristine state. In other words, you won't have the pure mode of passion, or the pure mode of goodness, or the pure... Of course, pure mode of goodness is actually transcendental, but it's mixed. You have mixed. Vishuddhasa was the pure mode of goodness. But you generally have mixed modes, just like different colors. For example, if you have three basic colors, there's our artist there. He'll tell you that this particular table is composed of a combination of the three basic colors, isn't it? Red, green, and blue, or something like that. I'm not an artist, so I don't know. So it's very hard to find, like, say, a pure red. It always has a mixture with some other color. Like you take the skin color, there's some red there, and I don't know what else. Maybe what other colors are in the skin? What? Anyway, whatever colors there are. It's a mixture. So in the modes of nature, it's the same thing. So we could actually diagnose people if we had a proper device. We just put an electronic device near their body and say, you're 23.222% goodness, and then whatever percent passion and whatever percent ignorance. So we suggest you eat certain types of food to bring yourselves to different modes. Because Krishna describes different foods in different modes. So everything is based on the mode. So one's religion that one develops is in accordance to whatever mode you happen to be in. And you're born in a certain type of body because of the modes that you associated with and cultivated in your last life. Just like Krishna also says in the Gita, that one takes a particular type of gross body surrounded by certain types of senses, based upon the subtle body, which he compares to be like the aroma that is carried by the air. So the subtle body is the aroma, the smell. So the smell, or the desire of the soul, the subtle body of the soul, carries us to a particular type of gross body. We can actually see, if we look at our gross body, that means the Panchamahabhuta body, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, if we look at this, we could see what our desires were in our last life, in the way that we left our last body. And also we can get an indication of what karma we had, simply by looking at the gross body. Anyway, so one develops a particular type of religion based upon the modes. And you'll find, if you look at all these different religions, it's quite interesting. I mean, you have some branches of Christianity, too, that are very fanatic. Everyone else but us is of the devil. And everyone else is going to hell. And you have other branches, like, what is it, Unitarian Church or something like that, where, it's just kumbaya. We're all together. So there's a mode of goodness there. Interesting. If someone had the time, they can analyze also different religions according to the combination of modes of nature. Anyway, getting back to the whole point of this verse, because I don't want to just talk about modes of nature. I want to talk about the mode of passion, which is being described in this verse. So I'm going to make references to different verses in the Gita that describe this mode of passion and the problems that accompany this mode of passion. Because in this verse that we read today, that one doesn't achieve what he wants. He thinks he's very advanced. He is frustrated with material activities either in this life or the next, and he achieves the opposite. So what he's... In a nutshell, what he's trying to achieve through passionate activities is happiness. That's ultimately what everybody's trying to achieve. You know, we are pleasure-seeking entities. We're trying to avoid pain and trying to obtain happiness. You know, that's a really easy way to designate it. So let's begin with the 14th chapter of the Gita, text 7. In the 14th chapter of the Gita, text 7, it says, in the mode of passion, the mode of passion is born of unlimited desires. That means you're being tortured at every minute. I mean, if you just had one desire, that would be pretty nice. And you could, if you could fulfill that desire, which is Krishna consciousness. You know, it just, if I just got that latest iPhone, then I will be happy in this world. But you find that after you get the latest iPhone, as Krishna also says, avritam janita janinam nishavarana kama rupena kuntia dushparena lenacha, because we're talking about lust. And lust is in a greater sense, doesn't simply mean, you know, all you need is love, or, you know, lusty affairs between different persons with different bodies. It means the intense desire to enjoy something, to objectify something or someone. That means, I'm going to unpack that statement. That means, let's say, object would be a telephone, you know, like an iPhone or something, or like I have a Note 4, Samsung Note 4. So that would be an object. But actually, you even turn people into objects when you're lusty, because you're trying to use them to get your own enjoyment. So that's really what lust is. It's the opposite of love. With love, you're trying to serve the other person, of course, hopefully in a Krishna conscious way, to bring them to the point of their real self-interest, which is Krishna consciousness. But in lust, it's me. It's about me. It's not about you. You know. So that the lusty relationship can be in terms of all these different relations, boss and servant, or boss and employee, or even mother and son. You know, like the mother says, you know, I want you to go to medical school to please me. That's a lusty relationship, because we're thinking of me. So that's really what lust is. It's thinking of me, or, you know, us, rather than them. So, of course, Krishna consciousness means we're thinking of others. So, anyway, so when you have all these desires, they just like increase. As Krishna says in the Gita, it's like putting, or Prabhupada says, like putting petrol, for those of you who don't know what petrol is, that's gasoline, on a fire to put a fire out. It just gets further inflamed. So that tortures you. If you have all these desires pulling you and pushing you in this way and that way, it's just like, it's so intense. And then the living entity that Krishna describes in this verse, in the 7th chapter, 14th chapter, text 7, is bound by fruitive actions. In other words, his actions just bind him. And in the 12th text of this chapter, the 14th chapter of the Gita, it says, in the mode of passion, there's an increase in the symptoms of, these things also torture you, great attachment, fruitive acts. In other words, I want that. Intense endeavor. I mean, it really makes you crazy, this intense endeavor. Just like, I mean, even yesterday, not that I was in the mode of passion, maybe it was, I was trying to do a lot, and I was, you know, trying to make a bank deposit, so I was doing it intensely, you know, just trying to squeeze as much as possible into a short period of time. And even I started adding things up wrong. You know, simple mathematics, like, you know, one and one is two. I was getting the wrong totals like three or four times because I was trying to, you know, intense endeavor. And it's just a miserable experience. An uncontrollable desire and hankering. It's just like, oh, being pulled continually. So that's the 12th verse. And the 15th verse is more description. Of course, this is the 15th verse describes that one who dies in the mode of passion takes birth amongst those engaged in fruitive acts. In other words, you're born in a family of mercantile family or something. And 16th verse of the 14th chapter says that action and passion yields misery. So you got all these descriptions about passionate activities. There's just a few more, actually quite a few more. 17th verse says, from the motive of passion, greed develops. In the 18th verse, it says, again, those in passion live on the earthly planet. So in other words, this is a passionate place, this earthly planet. In the heavenly planets, there's more goodness, and those in the mode of ignorance, of course, to go down to the hellish planets. So there's a passion. Everyone's thinking of acquiring things, especially, you know, in America, that there's this idea of consumption, and you throw away, it's a disposable thing. You know, there's they produce the products, so there's a planned obsolescence. Planned obsolescence is of two types. One is the thing breaks, like our web camera broke. Another one type is style. It goes out of style. You know, the styles change from time to time. And also, you know, according also with the ladies, I mean, you can't be wearing the same thing some other lady is wearing. You know, if you happen to show up at the priti bhoj, that comes before marriage, and two ladies are wearing the same sari, it is the most, let's say, miserable experience you can have. Isn't it? I mean, you show up and you're both in the same outfit. Can you imagine? I mean, for brahmacharis, or for me, I don't care. I mean, all the sannyasis wear the same outfit. We're supposed to be in the mode of goodness. Of course, all the sannyasis have to have a different watch. That's a different thing, and a different cell phone. Yeah, so, but you can see how this planet is made for passionate endeavors. You know, for acquiring things, disposing things, planned obsolescence, new things. So this is part of the mode of the planet itself, which is interesting. You know, the living on the planet itself. Of course, we can transform that with Krishna consciousness. Okay, and that's some of the verses from the 14th chapter. 17th chapter, so it's this 14th, 17th, and 18th that generally deal mostly with the modes of nature. And even, it's interesting, even the 18th, which is the, you know, final chapter, the conclusion chapter, has so many descriptions of the modes of nature. So the 17th chapter, just we'll take a few verses in there. There's a little buggy here. A bug in the mode of passion. It says that those in the mode of passion worship demons. And then we're not talking about generally demons like Hiranyakashipu and others, although sometimes people do that. And Prabhupada did say that during World War II there were some people worshiping Hitler. I guess they had a picture of Hitler and they were worshiping Hitler. I mean, that was their type of obeisances. They would raise their hand like that. So but we worship politicians who are exploiting us. They become, I mean, if you look at any of these either debates or talks by the politicians, I mean, people are waving their banners just like they're worshiping God, basically. You ever see that? You know, the American political things, and sometimes they actually make fun. There's some TV shows that make fun of these politicians. So it's just like they worship them. They put their pictures on their bumper stickers or whatever. So they worship the demons, you know, people who are actually exploiting them. People, of course, demons in this particular case basically means those in the mode of passion who are trying to get something from you. Because we talk about unlimited desires, intense endeavor, and lust. They're trying to get something from you, your vote in this particular case, so they can enjoy profit, adoration, distinction of being the president of the United States or being the senator or something like that. I mean, it's hard to understand what sort of joy there is in such a position. And in the fifth verse of this particular chapter, the 17th chapter, it says, those in the mode of passion engage in severe austerities and penances that are not mentioned in the scriptures. I mean, like you see the politicians doing that. They, you know, their life is just like extremely austere. And they're impelled by pride and egotism, lust, attachment. And what they do is they actually perform so many austerities, like Hiranyakashipu, for example, or even mundane people want to make a lot of money. They torture the material elements in the body. In other words, they mistreat their body and harass the super soul dwelling within, and therefore they're known as demons. In other words, one who performed too many austerities and hurt the body. Of course, as devotees, we should do things that are conducive to health. That's very, very important. We should not act, we should not eat things that hurt our health, we should not sleep too little or sleep too much, or eat too little or eat too much, or in other words, perform things in a mode of goodness, transcendental goodness way, whatever is best for keeping this body, which is our vehicle in this world for serving Krishna. So the 17th chapter, and then we go on later in the 17th chapter, and we describe, Krishna describes, I'm not Krishna. So Krishna describes different foods in different modes of nature. In other words, how to cultivate different modes of nature. Like if you eat foods, or you're attracted to foods that are tasteless, stale, decomposed, putrid, that means you're in the mode of ignorance. And if you're attached to this food that is too spicy, too hot, like that, a lot of garam masala in your food, then there's passion, and it impels passion, it's passionate food. Just like it says that if one's eating urdal or something like that, it's understood that they're very passionate. And even among sadhus, if they find a bunch of cashews in another sadhu's cave, they understand he's probably not following the principles. You know, but a bunch, you know, a lot, not just two or three cashews, because cashews are full of protein. So anyway, there's certain foods that impel their modes of nature. And foods in the mode of goodness are very healthy and build up your bodily flesh and not too much. Foods like quinoa, and Krishna doesn't mention that, of course, in the Gita. So there's different foods. And then later, then the 12th verse of this chapter, the 17th chapter, Krishna talks about sacrifice in the mode of passion, which is done out of pride, ostentation, like that. And so anyway, the 18th verse, he talks about penances. 21st verse, he talks about charity. And all these different activities, charity, penances, austerities, sacrifices, etc., are done in such a way that they cause someone like anxiety. Because we know really what causes distress is a lot of anxiety, isn't it? Anxiety and fear. Now, these are two very distressful situations. So the mode of passion just causes anxiety because you want more and more, you're worried about losing something. You're always feeling this anxiety, and therefore, actually, it's not even good for the body. You get sick. Later on, let's go to the 18th chapter. I just want to finish this. Krishna talks about renunciation in the mode of passion. In the 7th verse of the 18th chapter, Krishna talks about that those in the mode of passion renounce something because it's, or an activity or their duty because it's just too difficult. Out of difficulty, then they just think, oh, let's give it up. Just go to Hawaii. That's mode of passion. And out of difficulty, they renounce things. And then knowledge is described in the 21st verse of the 18th chapter. Knowledge in the mode of passion is to see different living entities in different bodies. In other words, to think that you're different from me. You don't have the same type of soul I have, to identify the soul with the body. So, in other words, to see you as white or black or Indian or American or Russian or male or female. And actually we see this like all the people who are, let's say, absorbed in sexism, for example. Sexism means, you know, discriminated against women. That's because they're in the mode of, they are influenced by the mode of passion. You know, we're better. Why are we better? Because we're the men. Because, I don't know, maybe the women are thinking also we're better. Because we're not as violent as those creeps. So, but that's passion. So people who are sexist or racist, they're impelled to a certain extent by even using religion. You know, saying, you know, pulling quotes out of context from the Shastras about, you know, women or different races or people not born in a certain type of family, you know, Brahminical family. That's all passion because you want pride. It's all impelled by pride. You have to really analyze what is one's statement or philosophy impelled by? What modes of nature are one's, is one's philosophy coming from? So generally in this world, it's from passion that one has a philosophy because they want to exploit others. They want to feel they're better than others. They want to be prideful. So we have to see how pervasive this passion is, as we mentioned before, because the Earth planet is meant for those in the mode of passion. I mean, you got a few people in the mode of ignorance, or a lot now, but it's meant for people in the mode of passion. So we have to be able to analyze that in our own consciousness too. It's not so much that we can point out fault in others and just say, hey, you're in the mode of passion, therefore I'm better than you. In other words, we're the mode of passion, we're finding fault in them. So, but it's important to be introspective in this regard. Uh-oh. Anyway, I had a lot more to say. But so we should understand these modes of nature. When Krishna describes the modes of nature in the Bhagavad Gita, it's not that just that Krishna is not giving us nectar. It is nectar. And it helps us analyze things in this world so we can proceed on the path of Krishna consciousness in a very rapid fashion. We have to be able to identify what the modes are and what Krishna consciousness is, and what Krishna consciousness isn't. Because we people generally think things in the modes of nature are part of Krishna consciousness. And Kapila Dev in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam touches on that to a certain extent. Okay, on that happy note.